The medical community has a chronic disease, and it is racism, according to our guest this hour. And she says the various diversity initiatives that medical schools employ, training in bias and cultural sensitivity, are not enough. We'll find out what is, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 14th. Our guest wrote the piece, "The patient called me colored girl. The senior doctor training me said nothing." And we will find out how this is a problem within the profession as well as with patients. And we will wonder what you think and wonder if you have witnessed this at all and what do you think ought to be done about it. Let me welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us Dr. Jennifer Okwe-Raekwu, who is a resident psychiatrist at Cambridge Health Alliance, a regular columnist for Stat News, and author of several pieces, including "The Patient Called Me Color Girl" and "The Senior Doctor Training Me Said Nothing." Good morning.
Me this morning.
Thank you very much for being with us. So, tell us about this experience where the patient called you colored girl and the senior doctor training you said nothing.
Well, you know, during your third year of medical school, students learn about the core practices of medicine. We rotate through a variety of specialties, you know, internal medicine, surgery, pediatrics, et cetera. And so during my internal medicine rotation, I was in an outpatient clinic. So that's not, you know, in the hospital, but outside the hospital, those day-to-day, you know, scheduled appointments. And the doctor, I happened to be in rural Virginia, away from UVA at the time, but sent to a place where UVA had, you know, chosen as a good learning site, a good place for my education. And so, you know, this physician that I was working with, you know, she was very kind. She was nice. We had a good relationship during the 4 weeks that I was there. And she had this practice of going into the patient room before just to let the patient know, you know, I have a student doctor working with me. Is it okay if, you know, she comes in and, you know, observes or asks a few questions? Because that's very important to train the next generation of physicians. And so this she went into the room, as usual, asked the patient. I could hear through the door that the patient consented, and the doctor, you know, peeked out and signaled me to come in. And as I came in, I noticed the patient was, she was an elderly, what I believe is an elderly white woman. I didn't ask her what her, you know, background or ethnicity is, but she at least presented as white. And she looks at me and goes, "Oh, there's another colored girl that lives upstairs from me." And I just kind of smiled and stuck out my hand and I said, "Well, my name is Jennifer. Thank you for allowing me to, you know, be part of your care." And, you know, the doctor turned away and started, you know, pulling up her medical records and asking, you know, questions about her, the reasons why she was coming in. And, you know, this same sort of thing happened 3 or 4 times throughout the same encounter, you know, referring to me as a colored girl or telling me that there was another colored girl that lives upstairs for her, or like colored girls are nice. And I just, you know, I just kind of stood there and smiled, because I was a guest in this home. Yeah. You know, it wasn't my place to be confrontational or, you know, destabilize whatever relationship this physician had with the doctor. But at the same time, it was very saddening and uncomfortable that the physician training me didn't say anything, not just once, but the 3 or 4 other times that it happened throughout the encounter. And there was never any hostility there. I didn't sense any sort of overt hatred, but it's, that sort of history is still based very much in hatred. So whether it's said with kindness or welcoming demeanor, it doesn't make it any less awkward or hurtful or inappropriate.
Yeah, and like we had a comment, Anna on Facebook, who said, "Oh, the things I've heard elderly dementia patients say to their caregivers. Thank goodness caregivers care as much as they do." is there, I mean, I'm not sure if Anne was saying that this was a, you know, a harmless comment from someone who didn't know better, but you're saying that even if that's the case, it's still hurtful.
I think when you bring dementia into the picture, clearly somebody is not all the way there, not all the way in their right mind. So I think when someone has dementia, they may say things that are hurtful, that I think you can stomach it a little bit more just because this person doesn't necessarily have access to like rational thought and isn't necessarily in control of everything that they're saying or doing. But that certainly wasn't the case in this position. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, as someone in medicine, I've seen, you know, patients with dementia saying things that are unkind or even, you know, being violent towards their caregivers. And it does take a lot. Like, you know, like Anne mentioned, being a caregiver requires you to above all care for another human being, no matter, you know, what the consequence or what the situation or circumstances may be. And so, you know, sometimes, you know, in the process of actually writing this article, I got a lot of feedback from some readers, of Stat News. And one, woman wrote me and told me that she was very thankful that caregivers are able to, you know, kind of rise above the fray in this instance, that her, I think, mother-in-law had suffered with dementia and had said some really, you know, like anti-Semitic things to her caregiver. And she was, this person who wrote me was really embarrassed because she's like, oh, does my mother-in-law think this way, or does she feel this way, or is she unable to control it, which can be very hurtful to people around. But, you know, that it's kind of like it's a reason. It's like the ability to control our impulses or think through our actions. That's kind of what you know, separate, right, like separates mankind from other species. And I think once you kind of know that something is wrong, or somebody has told you that your behavior is hurtful or inappropriate and you continue to do it, that's where we have a problem. Because not everybody is raised in, you know, the most liberal of settings where, you know, or diverse settings where diversity is the standard of excellence. And in fact, it may be foreign. And so the moment that you know that this is, you know, the world is changing and this is now what's considered appropriate, and we're not doing this to hurt anybody, but rather to create more fellowship amongst man and make the world a better place. And that's where I feel like some of the problems arise.
Right. And you were surprised when the attending or presiding physician didn't say anything. What would you have liked her to have said in this situation?
Yeah, I mean, this could have been handled a variety of different ways. I think, first and foremost, as a minimum, I feel like she should have at least addressed it with me privately. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, this doctor was practicing in the community, clearly knew this patient for several years. I don't know what the depth of their relationship is, but perhaps that's just maybe that's just what their relationship was. I don't think that my presence there should have changed the nature of that relationship, but that physician did have a responsibility to me as a student, as someone who she is training as to be part of the next generation of physicians. And so at a minimum, privately, I feel like she should have said something to me like, oh, like, I'm so sorry that this patient said X, Y, or Z. I'm sorry you had to go through that. That was awkward. Or, you know,
She didn't even mention it at all, as though it was appropriate,
it was really,
or something.
Yeah, it was really ignored. I mean, I talked to some other experts in, you know, diversity in academic medicine, and, you know, some of them even go as far as saying that, you know, you should address the patient right there, like head on. And it's not, and it doesn't necessarily have to be something that's confrontational or damaging to your relationship, just, you know, reemphasizing, well, we use that kind of language here, or I would prefer if you refer to my student as, you know, Dr. Jennifer, or, you know, whatever is more appropriate than colored girl, because it's just so demeaning on so many different levels. And I'm going to school to learn how to be a physician, to care for people and to do my best to serve the community. And that requires a lot of dedication and time and I just wonder if it was another student, if it was a, you know, a white male or a white female, like, would they have been called a girl instead of, you know, a student doctor or even a woman? You know, it's, and to have, you know, your skin color kind of predicate that basis of your relationship is just kind of undermines a lot of the work that you do to be able to gain the skills to serve, you know, the very people who are causing these kind of insults.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue to talk with our guest who will relay an example of how people in the medical community are showing racism or bias toward their patients and what needs to be done about that when we come back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Our guest this hour says that the medical community isn't doing enough to address issues of racism and prejudice within the profession. And we are talking about some of her encounters with racism on the job and how she dealt with them. And we will talk about how she says more people in the medical community need to recognize racism and bias and speak out against it. And we will welcome your questions for her. We'll welcome your own stories. Maybe you have experienced racism within the medical community, maybe as a patient, maybe as a medical professional, a doctor, a nurse. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Are you surprised by Dr. Jennifer's example of the patient who called her colored girl and the a senior doctor who was training her saying nothing? What should have happened in this situation? Do you have other questions or experiences to share? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dr. Jennifer Okwe-Rekwu, a resident psychiatrist at Cambridge Health Alliance and a regular columnist for Stat News. So, Dr. Jennifer, we talked about the example of the patient who called you colored girl and the doctor who was training you saying nothing. What about a doctor who was training you telling you that you needed to take care of a somewhat troublesome patient who happened to be of Haitian descent?
So in that situation, there was clearly a language barrier, a lot of socioeconomic issues at play. This patient had shown up to the clinic at the wrong time, was turned away, but, you know, he and his daughter were arguing with the reception staff that, oh, they couldn't, you know, come back another time, that they didn't have another ride, et cetera. And so the senior physician in this ear, nose, and throat clinic where I was working during my third year of medical school, finally consented. I was like, okay, we'll squeeze them in, this and that, but he was clearly not happy about it. And so he said, oh, well, like, stick the med student on him. And, you know, as a med student, I'm there to learn, I'm there to observe, I'm there to, you know, develop clinical skills. But just the way that this patient encounter was set up, I couldn't help but feel it was a bit of a perversion, you know, sticking the med student on him. That's not how we think about, you know, the way you deliver compassionate care. Furthermore, you know, when the time came to finally see the patient, he called this patient Amadou Diallo to me, which was very shocking. You know, I was a child when I remember seeing, you know, the police lights flashing on the television screen, like, during the 90s, and trying to understand why police officers would kill this, you know, young black man. And so the name Amadou Diallo for me brought up a lot of, you know, memories, especially in the wake of all the recent instances of police brutality. And so I just thought this was incredibly insensitive and unkind. And to use a young man's legacy, a young man's name as an insult for this older Haitian man His name was not similar, you know, at all. And so it wasn't kind of a slip of the tongue or an instance of getting tongue-tied. And so, you know, in the moment, I was just kind of like, oh, like, that's not his name. Just very politely, and, like, nobody said anything. He didn't react. Like, the physician didn't react. And I was just directed to the patient's room, and it was business as usual. But then, you know, several weeks later when we get our evaluations, because after every rotation you do, which can last anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks, you get evaluations, which are very important to your progression as a career as a physician, because other physicians very much rely on, you know, the words of their esteemed colleagues to, you know, judge your performance, and, you know, it can determine the type of job that you get or your residency placement, et cetera. And so when I saw my evaluations, I felt that some of them were particularly unkind. And I say that with humility because this was my very first rotation. I know that I am not, you know, having this be the first time that you're really interacting with patients in a formal setting, like, I know I'm not going to be the best. I always try my best, but I know I'm not going to know everything. I'm not going to make mistakes. But when I read the comments that this physician wrote, I couldn't tell if his words reflected my performance or if it was, there was something more sinister behind it. And that to me was particularly terrifying because, you know, I wasn't necessarily in control of my own destiny if somebody else was writing these subjective comments about me. And
you were concerned that because you mildly spoke out and said that's not our patient's name, that the attending physician was holding that against you and giving you a poor performance review because you said that.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many issues at play, and the fact that it was very hard to tease out what exactly was the source of these negative comments, it just kind of was a huge teaching moment for me, you know, that it's almost just better to keep your mouth shut because, you know, the next time if I don't say anything and, like, the comments are so poor, then I know, okay, so this is actually a reflection of my performance and not because I, you know, tried to stand up for what was right or what was just or fair or kind for our patient. And, you know, medicine, it's a career of delayed gratification. You know, you go to school for what seems like forever, at least 4 years of college, 4 years of med school, then you enter into at least 3 to 7 years of basic residency training and not to speak of fellowship beyond that. So by the time you actually start, you know, if you go straight from high school to college to med school to residency to fellowship, you're at least in your 30s, mid-30s or something by the time you, you know, are practicing as a fully fledged, you know, trained physician. And that has a lot of, you know, social and, you know, financial ramifications. That's why I call it a profession of delayed gratification. And so for me, in these instances, you know, as a Black woman, I know that I can do more good in this world as a Black woman than I can, like, using my talents, as I can do more good in this world as a Black physician than I would be able to if I am not able to reach the end goal. So the choice I made to kind of hold my tongue and not necessarily speak out in the moment, it saddened me a lot that that was a choice I felt like I had to make. But, you know, at the end of the day, when I am in that position, when I'm going to be able to speak up for my patients and for my students, I feel like I can do more good in that position than not making it to the end goal in the first place.
And are you, I guess you are calling on physicians and others in the medical community, even patients, to speak out when you witness racism or prejudice?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a multifaceted effort. Like, the community has to be open and inclusive in order for those conversations not only to take place, but not just fall on deaf ears. Like, people have to be receptive to the message. But I do think that senior physicians, people who are in positions of power, do have an obligation to, you know, speak up for their patients, for their students, you know, for other medical staff who are, you know, are not spared from these types of interactions. You know, in after I wrote that article, I talked to a number of physicians in academic medicine, and you know, you never really may be completely free to stand up for what is right and just, because there is always somebody ahead of you, or in the hierarchy, there's always somebody like a chair of a department or a hospital administrator or whatever it might be. So you may not always be free to, you know, speak your mind in the way that you wish, but there are little things that you can do, especially because, you know, medicine at the end of the day, it's about relationships between people and fellowship amongst, you know, a doctor and a patient, patients and their families, between, you know, the hospital staff as a whole. And so if we are able to facilitate communities of respect and inclusion where everyone feels like they have a voice and that voice is important and they can feel valued, when these, you know, transgressions occur, if we're able to talk about them, people can learn. And that's all that, you know, all that we can really ask for. You can learn and try and move forward and do better the next time.
I know that we have a lot of people in the medical community listening to us right now, as you frequently call in, especially when we are discussing various medical issues or issues affecting the medical community. We would like to hear from you right now. Have you witnessed racism in the medical profession, either from the professionals or how they treat other doctors or how they treat patients? What do you think ought to be done? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Or maybe you're a patient who has experienced some sort of bias or racism in a medical setting. You let us know your story. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Jennifer Okwe-Raekwu, a resident psychiatrist at Cambridge Health Alliance. She's a regular columnist for Stat News, and we are talking with her about the issues that she raises in a recent piece, "The Patient Called Me Colored Girl, The Senior Doctor Training Me Said Nothing." And she says that in this piece that the medical profession, medicine, struggles with a chronic disease, racism. And she writes that the various diversity initiatives and training on bias and cultural sensitivities that go on in medical schools are not enough. That every one of us, she writes, needs to own the principles that protect us and our patients from racism and bias. That means learning to see prejudice and speaking up against it. But that is far, far easier said than done. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me ask you, Dr. Jennifer, as our lines are filling up, if you think that these two examples that you highlight in this piece are just really rare, isolated incidents, or is this something that you think is more widespread of a problem?
It's definitely a widespread problem. You know, those two instances are just short stories I could easily write down, you know, in a reported article. Some instances of bias are a little bit harder to see. They're a little bit harder to tease out. Maybe the person who is just experiencing them may be the only person to know that an aggression or a microaggression just took place. And other times they're more overt and aggressive, or, you know, more colorful in nature and more visible to more people. As I wrote that article, I got feedback from so many different people. Like, the premise of the piece was just kind of combating prejudice and bias. And so many women who have trained in medicine in the 70s and 80s reached out to me and said, they were white women. They told me they were white. And they said that, you know, I don't know what it feels like to be a black person in this country, but I do know what it feels like to be a woman training in medicine at a time where we weren't welcome, mm-hmm. and how you have to treat with the subtle attitudes and sometimes not so subtle attitudes in the hostile environment. And, you know, medicine is hard enough as it is. Like, learning to be a doctor is a very hard thing to do. And when you throw on top of that a culture that doesn't necessarily accept you or, you know, foster your growth or your development in the most hospitable way, it affects your mental health. It affects your well-being. In some people, it creates more drive to do better so they can give back to the next generation. But that's really placing a lot of onus on, you know, the individual. Whereas that definitely should take place, but it should, you know, be a community effort. I got some feedback from some physicians that say, you know, the ways in which I'm a minority are hidden. You know, I'm Jewish and people don't know that because, you know, I don't necessarily talk about it at work. And I hear anti-Semitic things all the time. And it's very heartbreaking just because you can't see the ways that I'm different doesn't mean that I am not different.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a white male doctor who happens to be gay, you know, wrote me as well and said, yeah, I'm kind of a silent minority in that sense as well. And you hear all these things, and just because the ways in which you're different don't precede you doesn't mean that those types of diversity in our community don't exist. And so sometimes we're inadvertently hurting people just because they don't, you know, saying from the mountaintops that, oh, like, I'm black, or, oh, I'm Jewish, or, oh, I'm gay, or, oh, like, however I'm different, like, insert your diversity here. Just because people can't see that doesn't mean that our communities aren't rich and full of people who are not the same. And so we have to be cognizant of that in creating communities that are, you know, inclusive and not perpetuating bias and prejudice.
Yeah, let's take a call. Jerry in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Jerry. Jerry, are you there? Well, I don't know where Jerry went. So let's go to another call. We'll take, let's see here. We'll take Chris. Chris in Sun Prairie, go ahead.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I'm not sure.
I can.
We have a problem. We have double calls on here, and I'm not sure what's going on. Dr. Jennifer, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah.
Hello?
All right.
Hello?
So, Jerry, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, I'm very interesting program. You know, I'm a black man, and I've experienced this all my life. The fact is, unfortunately for the young physician, this is not limited to the medical profession. It's every aspect of life, and I'm sure she knows that. It just so happens that she's studying a doctor. Again, I have friends who are in that field of medical field, and they've gone through the same thing. You know, but again, this is as American pie.
I get it. And so I guess Jerry's saying, and I'm sorry for the confusion here with the phones, but Jerry's saying that racism, prejudice exists in society. Certainly it's going to exist in a medical setting. Nothing unusual about that. Dr. Jennifer, what's your response to that?
Yeah, Jerry, I definitely agree. I definitely agree. You know, I've grown up, the skin color I have has preceded me my entire life, and so I definitely know all the things that you are alluding to. I feel like medicine, however, I mean, it would be wonderful if prejudice and bias and racism could be eradicated and we don't need to deal with it anymore. But unfortunately, that's not the reality, and I feel like the stakes are just that much higher in medicine, because here we are dealing with people in times of crisis, in times of illness, and what is more precious than your health? Like, that's something that is so priceless. And so everybody deserves the best opportunity to have health care that will allow them to, you know, gain again that precious, invaluable commodity of health. And so if you have physicians who are, you know, subtly biased against you, or are subtly treating you different than other people, then that's not the way to assure that kind of equity, you know, on the education.
I have to jump in because we have news coming up next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking with Dr. Jennifer Okwe-Raykwu, a resident psychiatrist at Cambridge Health Alliance. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Our guest this hour says that the medical community isn't doing enough to address issues of prejudice and bias, both within the profession and with patients. She has been telling us about some of her encounters with racism on the job and what she thinks needs to happen. to improve the situation. And we are welcoming your questions, your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Dr. Jennifer Okwe-Raikwu is a resident psychiatrist at Cambridge Health Alliance, a regular columnist for Stat News, and the author of many pieces, including the piece that prompted our conversation, "The Patient Called Me Colored Girl, The Senior Doctor Training Me Said Nothing." Back to the phones, and Chris in Sun Prairie is with us now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Joy. Great topic. I managed the residents panel at the VA for a while and did not see any evidence of racism towards the residents. I did see some push, I guess, say, evidence of racism from the patients. But I will say that when I was in nursing school, I did, unfortunately, witness racism toward one of my fellow students who I thought was highly qualified. And being from the Dominican Republic, her language barrier was kind of used as a sly way to discriminate against her. I felt it was unfair and spoke up about it. And I commend the doctor for speaking up about it because it is patient care and patient focus. And that's when I confront evidence of bias, and I often see it in as sexism more than racism. You have to say, how is this patient-centered care? How is this good care? Where does this help patient safety? And I've been rather bold about that because you can always go to the bottom line and get to the heart of the issue very quickly.
Yeah, so Chris, what would you like to see happen to change the situation?
You know, Joy, I really believe that it goes back to the family and how you're brought up and the greater amount of understanding in the culture. And, you know, I my dad was very influential on me, making sure that I treated everyone with respect and dignity and looking past some of those stereotypes that were around me.
Yeah. Dr. Jennifer, your response to that?
Yeah, I very much agree that a lot of the way we think and feel and develop into, you know, citizens in this world comes from family units. But unfortunately, that's not the only place that we learn. You know, we go to schools that either reinforce or challenge, you know, some of our beliefs. I know that when I went to college, a lot of the things I grew up thinking, you know, were changed, and I think they definitely changed for the better. So I think especially in the medical profession, we should take advantage of, you know, those teachable moments, times where we can learn. And so I agree with, you know, what you said, that when people stand up and challenge instances of bias and prejudice, it not only helps the person who is, I guess, the victim of that injustice, but then everybody else who's watching, they can see an example of what social justice looks like. They can see how these sorts of behaviors can have many downstream effects, such as improving patient care and improving, you know, the experience of the people that we are ultimately trying to help.
Do you think, can you talk about the state of diversity, inclusion in the medical profession right now?
Yes. Diversity itself, I think, has come a long way. There's still a long way to go, but there have been increasing numbers of minorities in medicine. Unfortunately, I read a report by the AAMC, the Association of American Medical Colleges, saying that the number of black men has not improved in medical school since, I want to say, 1978, which was kind of a shocking statistic for me. I mean, I live this every day. I don't really see that many black men around, but just to see that statistic on paper that we haven't improved in that demographic since the 1970s is a little bit shocking. Mm-hmm. I think people are coming to recognize that diversity it's not just affirmative action. It's not just, let's get more black people and let's get more, you know, people like Native American students in. It's not just about numbers. It's about improving the collective wisdom that we can all pull from by having people with diverse perspectives and backgrounds and life circumstances, such that when we encounter these patients or patients like them or similar to them, it's not that you're going to be the master of anyone's culture ever, but you can get that one step closer to understanding and appreciating the humanity of their experience if you have multiple chances to interface with people who are different than you. I think diversity has definitely improved, but again, the next step forward is inclusion. You can't just get a number of diverse applicants and like throw them into the mix and expect them to thrive. You have to create situations, you have to create an environment where you recognize the unique needs of being a minority in a majority situation. I think that's the next step. That's where we really need to go. I think a lot of diversity initiatives, they come from the top down. Like a university will recognize that diversity is a standard of excellence that they want to invest in, and you know, make changes to admissions, what have you. But then the people, like the lived lives of those diverse applicants, are impacted by the fact that the people that are, you know, their peers, the people that they are progressing through education or training with, may not fully buy into that standard of excellence. So you know, I think it's the full buy-in that's really going to make a change.
Chris, our previous caller, didn't say so, but he told my producer that he is a nurse, and you know, he sees, bias as a male nurse. But he also said that he sees most of the issues with patients directed at the medical profession. What should the medical profession do? What should an individual doctor or nurse do if a patient expresses some sort of prejudice or bias in the interaction?
Yeah, I mean, definitely you have to read the situation. If somebody is throwing out expletives and being disrespectful to your staff in an emergent situation, then obviously that's not the time to deal with it. But, you know, in times where it's like more calm or you have more time to address it, I think you definitely should. I wrote a follow-up piece to the stat article that, you know, the segment is based on, and I got to talk to a woman who told me, you know, if her patients ever say anything insensitive to her or to her patients or just make a comment that they feel like, oh, because she's a white woman, she probably believes this racist or this biased thing as well. She just says, you know, it really surprises me that you would say that. And she says that that's kind of like a neutral way to address the situation, show that she does not believe whatever it is that you just said, puts the onus on the person who is saying, you know, these hurtful or discriminatory comments, and just gives them a chance to think or to pause and you know, ask, you know, it can lead to a conversation or just a moment of reflection. So that's like this one way that someone can simply, you know, begin to stand up to instances of this sort of injustice.
Let's go to Marla in Milwaukee. Hi, Marla.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a nurse practitioner. I've worked in nursing for like 37 years, and I've encountered a number of biases, and I am white. It's not just race, but also role-based, doctors versus nurses, et cetera. As a nurse practitioner, I do work with student nurse practitioners, and I would like to know what would be a good approach to handle such a situation that Dr. Jennifer went through. I would like to think, with my history of not being afraid to challenge, I would at least reintroduce her as student Dr. Jennifer at least a couple of times when I would hear the patient say that, and then hope I would like to talk to the Jennifer after the encounter for feedback. To make it a teachable moment for me. So I was just wondering, what would Dr. Jennifer, you know, like to have seen happen in that situation?
Yeah, and we only have about a minute to go. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but Dr. Jennifer?
Yeah, definitely. I think at a minimum, addressing it with me privately, because nobody is an expert in knowing how to deal with intolerance and injustice. Every situation is different. Every encounter, you know, is is unique. And so at a minimum, like you said, as a teacher, having that humility to just at least acknowledging that this happened, I think will go a long way in creating, you know, respecting the sanctity of that teacher-student relationship, making the student know that they're definitely not alone and that their needs are not ignored or overlooked. And so even if you don't know what to do, privately saying, I didn't know how to handle that situation. Like, let's think through how we can handle it better together. I think that would be a positive step forward.
In our final minute, what do you think it'll take before we're able to, make some movement on this situation?
I think time is probably the number one ingredient. People don't change overnight. But like I said, with the increasing, you know, diversity of the physician and overall medical workforce, more people who understand the needs of diverse medical professionals, but then also our rapidly diversifying patient population. The more minds that we have, you know, working towards this sort of equity, the better it's going to be, and the more teaching we'll be able to do. So one person can teach a lot of people, and I think time is going to be the best teacher.
Thank you so very much for being with us. Dr. Jennifer Okwe-Rekwu is a resident psychiatrist at Cambridge Health Alliance, a regular columnist for Stat News. We have posted her piece, "The Patient Called Me Colored Girl. The Senior Doctor Training Me Said Nothing," on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thank you to producers Bill Martins, Kai Brito, Nyasia Ellison, and Elizabeth Deliquess. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.